Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to another episode of Dad Talk. I want to start off by introducing a new intro with new beginnings and new adjustments to each of our lives. We know that there are new beginnings that we must take, and with me, my journey has come to me going back to school and furthering my education, and with that, there are some parts of my personal life that I can no longer put out there because of professional boundaries, and it's something that I have come to accept and something that I definitely need continuous practice on. But that being said, you guys, usually if you're a regular listener, you know what my normal intro is, and I'm probably not going to go back and change it on the older episodes or anything like that. But moving forward, I would like our new intro just to be about centering yourself, being very mindful of what you're feeling in this moment, what brought you to this episode, why this episode is of some type of importance to you, and to just reflect on having an open mind and keeping an open mind to not only this episode, but episodes in the future. Know that I am not here to change your mind or to skew your beliefs or anything like that, but I am here to educate you and share my personal knowledge on topics that I feel more people need to be involved in, conversations that I feel need to be started, and stuff like that. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into today's episode. Hello, 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 everyone. I want to start off by apologizing for how late this episode and the episodes that are following it have came out. This episode in particular, I have recorded 3 or 4 different times, and each time it just didn't feel right. Every time I listened back to it, it sounded very scripted and like I was literally just reading off of the blog post that I was making about it. Because I know a lot of you know that I make blog posts to go alongside with my episodes, because I don't want people thinking that all of my episodes are just opinion based, because a lot of them aren't. Majority of the podcasts that I put out, or a majority of the topics that I discuss, are not just about my opinions on things. These are things that I've done extensive research on, talked to people about, learned their different experiences and stuff like that. And so it's not opinion based, they're fact based. So I like to have blogs that go alongside with some of these episodes so that it's not like I'm pushing off my opinion about things. But when it came to this episode in particular, because I don't want it to sound like I'm pushing my opinion of intersectionality off on people, it definitely came off as me, one, talking extremely fast throughout the episode, and forcing what it was that I wanted everybody to know into such a short amount of time, because I was either recording on my way to work, on my way home from work, at work when I had some free time, or on my lunches and stuff like that, and it wasn't authentic enough for me to publish it or for me to continue to feel like I could put it out there for you guys. So I apologize for this going out there. I know that's not anything new to you guys. I literally start every episode off apologizing for how long it took me to put these episodes out and stuff like that. But with this one in particular, I wanted it to, or with these 3 podcast episodes that I'm going to be putting out over the next couple of weeks. I want these to be genuine and authentic, and I don't want them to be rushed, and I don't want people, when they come to listen to these, feel like they're being forced to think a certain way or to believe a certain thing and stuff like that. I want people to take these episodes and take the information that I give them in these episodes and go out and do their own research and fact check things that I'm saying, or, you know, search the things that I talk about and find more in-depth articles and research on the things that I'm talking about, and then come back to me and say, hey, I actually found what you said to be extremely wrong, and this is why. You know, I don't want my episodes to be the end all be all for these topics. I want these to be discussions that we talk about. I want these to be things that we, you know, that get people talking, and it not be a divisive thing. You know, when it comes to topics like today's topic, intersectionality is something that is going to help us understand people who may be in our same characteristic groups but go through life a little bit differently than us, because there is something about them that, or about their identity, that is a little bit different from us, you know. So the best place for us to start, you know, with this, after I've already apologized, you know, is to understand what intersectionality is. And intersectionality, very simply put, is the interconnection of our social characteristics, you know, like things like race, class, sexual orientation, gender identity, disability, physical disability, those types of things. How those things combined give an individual or a group of individuals certain disadvantages based on being a part of more than one of those characteristic groups, you know, so, or minority groups. So when we talk about intersectionality, we're talking about every single aspect of a person that makes that person who they are, or every aspect of a group of people that make that group of people what they are. So when we're talking about intersectionality, we're talking about Black trans women, or disabled Black gay men, or disabled Asian trans women, you know, like people who fit into multiple minority groups that then are discriminated against based off of the different types of minority groups that they are part of. So when you think of, you know, disabled gay Asian trans women, you know, so they're not only are they being discriminated on the basis of them being disabled, but they're being discriminated against on the basis of them being gay. They're being discriminated against them on the basis of them being Asian. They're being discriminated against them on the basis of them being transgendered. And they are being discriminated against on the basis of them being female, or identifying as female, you know, or being female, you know, simply put, being female. So having all of those different characteristics that make up that individual, you can see how those are very distinctive different types of discriminations that that person is going to face. You know, Google's definition of the word intersectionality is extremely confusing. So I'm not even going to, if you want to Google what intersectionality is, go ahead and do it. But it's simply put, it is all of the different characteristics that make up an individual, that puts an individual into a minority group, but also puts them into multiple minority groups. So why is, or where did it start? Let's not even talk about why it's important yet. Let's talk about where it came from. The coin intersectionality was first coined by Kimberlé Crenshaw in, I believe it was 1989. This is all in my podcast, in my blog post. I don't even have my blog post pulled up right now. But intersectionality was first coined by Kimberly Crenshaw in 1989, when she was writing an article based on court cases that dealt with race and sexual issues in court cases. So like one of her court cases dealt with the discrimination that Black women were facing, and also the discrimination that Black women were facing as it pertained to them being Black, and the discrimination that Black women face as it pertained to them being women, and how it somehow in these court cases, it seemed as if the law had forgotten that Black women identify as both being Black and being female. You know, it's like people don't seem to understand that there are complexities that come with our, you know, our identities. And I've heard a lot of people say, pick a struggle. Like, you can't be someone who is being discriminated against because you're Black and you're also being discriminated against because you're a woman. Like, pick a struggle. You can't have both. And it's like, at the end of the day, we are complex individuals, so our discrimination is going to be just as complex as we are. So when Kimberly Crenshaw first coined this term, she was talking with a bunch of her colleagues who thought that there was, like, they felt that there was something weird going on with the law, and these court cases proved that, you know, it proved. And I don't remember what the court cases were. You can definitely, if you Google Kimberly Crenshaw and intersectionality, it will pull up thousands of articles about the article that she wrote in 1989 about these court cases. It will give you the names of the court cases and all that kinds of stuff for you to better understand where she was coming from and what intersectionality at that time meant. You know, as the years progress, intersectionality itself progresses because we as individuals progress and our understanding of the complexities of our identities progress. So what does all of this mean, and what is its importance? Since we know what it means, we kind of have a sense of an understanding of where it came from, what sparked it up, you know. And I'm not going to go into full length detail of Kimberly Crenshaw's background and why she coined this and all that other kind of stuff. That was one thing that I went on a huge tangent in my last recording, and it just made no sense because it didn't go along with what we were talking about. Because this, the main thing is, what is it and why is it important? And I understand that the history of it is very important, but I encourage you to go out and read the articles that Kimberly Crenshaw, and I could be saying her name wrong, it could be Kimberly, but I don't know why, but for some reason, Kimberly just sounds more correct to me. But with that being said, I implore you guys to go out and do the research and read those articles for yourself to have a better understanding and interpret what she has to say in your own way, because even when I was reading it, the interpretation that I was getting off of it also, I know, isn't going to be the same interpretation that other people are going to get out of it. So I definitely encourage you guys to go out and do the research on those articles yourself. So now that we have a brief definition of the word intersectionality and a brief understanding of its history, I think it's important that we talk about why it's so important. And intersectionality is important because it gives us a better understanding of the different types of inequalities and implications that our different identity characteristics, how they impact on a social status, or how our experiences, because whether we want to admit it, there definitely is a hierarchy to our human identities and our experiences, and their advantages and their disadvantages, it gives us understanding. Intersectionality gives us the understanding of how those inequalities and implications and how those things impact other people, and how can we be a little bit more sympathetic or empathetic and sometimes sensitive to the different types of situations that individuals that are different from us, or the same but experience life different from us, how do we get to a point where we understand where they're coming from and then move to a place where we are able to help them? Bernadette, oh, and I'm not going to say her last name because I fucking butchered it so many times, but if you Google or whatever browser you use, if you search Bernadette O, intersectionality, I'm 1,000% sure you will find the thousands of articles that I found about her. But she gave examples of intersectionality when she talked about the civil rights movement and when she talked about feminism. So when it came to the civil rights movement, the civil rights movement's purpose was to fix oppression of people based on race. So when it came to the civil rights movement, you know, it was solely about making equality for black people. But the problem is that, like, I'm not saying that there was a problem with the civil rights movement. Civil rights movement helped so many people. But the problem, one of the issues that was stirred up during the civil rights movement, is that black women were not given the same equality as black men were. Black women were the backbone of the civil rights movement. They organized, they marched, they bled next to their, you know, their male counterparts, but yet were left invisible when it comes to being the faces of the civil rights movement. When it comes to feminism at the time when it first was sparked, when it was first introduced, feminism favored or focused on inequalities based on gender, but more as it pertained to white women. You know, white women, our feminism allowed white women the right to vote. But it took another 45 years for black women to get the same right to vote. So if we were talking about equating or making feminism about making equality for all genders, black women should have been included in that, because we're making equality for all genders. We're not just making equality for white women and white men. We're making equality for all the genders on the spectrum. So that would include black women as well. But black women were not included in that because they were also black. So because black men could not vote, black women still did not get the right to vote. When it comes to feminism, and these are Bernadette's words, feminism has traditionally centralized around white womanhood. White womanhood was supposed to be, you know, the de facto definition of the female experience. And so because of this, Because of both experiences, Black women face oppression from two groups. You face discrimination from women and from people of color. And I don't want to sit here and say that the efforts for both groups were for naught, because they weren't. They helped out a lot of people. And to sit here and deny that the civil rights movement or feminism, the feminist movement, didn't help anybody and it only helped certain individuals would be a bold-faced lie. Because even though it happened so long ago, these are movements that have continued to help everybody in the long run. That's their point. Their point is to make equality for all races and to make equality for all genders. Like, that's the whole point of it. It's not just about making equality for women, and it's not just about making equality for Blacks. It's about making equality for all races and for making equality for all genders. But with all of that being said, neither of these groups at their time supported women of color, because neither group took the time to address the challenges that Black women faced during those times. So a reason why intersectionality is so important is because when you have people who fit into multiple groups, like Black women, for example, you have to be able to meet them in a medium where you're going to create systems or movements or whatever that are going to help them out as not only a woman, but as a Black woman. Because at the end of the day, they are not just a woman, they are a Black woman, and their racial identity is just as important as their gender identity. So by making movements that only focus on half of who they are, or a small sliver of who they are, you're not taking care of that individual as a whole, or that group as a whole. When you sit here and you talk about, oh yeah, we want to make equality for the genders, but we're only going to focus on women. Like, what women are you talking about? Are you talking about naturally born women, thin women, short women, bodybuilder women? What type of women are you talking about? Are we talking about all women? Or are we talking about a small sliver of what makes up a woman? And we're only going to help out those individuals. No, when we talk about feminism and we talk about gender equality, we're talking about all genders. We're talking about women, we're talking about men, we're talking about trans individuals, we're talking about non-binary individuals, we're talking about every single person that falls under a gender category. And there are some people who don't fall under the gender category, but you're still a part of that. You can't sit here and exclude people because their gender identity doesn't fit into what society's definition of gender identity is. You can't just exclude people for that. So what the importance of understanding intersectionality is, when you have people who fit into multiple groups. So, like, for example, let's say we have a campus, right? We have a campus that has hotlines set up for suicide prevention or for sexual assault victims to call in and report it or talk to someone or get counseling, but it's only available through the phone and it's only available in English. So off the bat, you are excluding individuals who don't speak English, who are foreign students, who English isn't their first language. They're ASL students. I hope that that's the right group that I'm talking about, or the right acronym that I'm using. We all know I'm not that smart sometimes, but or you have individuals who are disabled and can't use the telephone. You know, none of those individuals would be able to call in or use this service. So because they can't use it, it discourages them from calling in. It discourages them from making reports. It discourages them from doing things or utilizing these services, which then isolates them and victimizes them even more because there aren't services made specifically for them. There aren't translators available to help a Spanish-speaking student who is trying their damnedest to learn English but isn't there yet. And they're trying to report something that happened to them or get some kind of counseling because they're not feeling their best. And they can't because the person on the other line doesn't speak Spanish. And they don't have a translator available for them. Another example would be immigration, for example. So there is, I believe it's a law. I could be wrong about this, but it's called, I think it's called the National Act or the Nationality Act. And it deals with marrying a U.S. citizen to then get your residency or your American citizenship. And one of the issues that comes with this is when it comes to the Nationality Act, and I'm pretty sure that's what it is. When it comes to the Nationality Act, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when it comes to the Nationality Act, you have to be married and living with your sponsor. That's what they call it. But that's your spouse, the person that you marry, the person that is supporting you and taking care of you. They call it a sponsor, but it's your spouse. You have to be married to and live with them for at least 2 years in order for your citizenship to go through. A lot of people, or not a lot of people, but a lot of women have reported being the victim of abuse at the hands of their spouses. And because of this, a lot of them, for starters, and when it comes to the Nationality Act, you have to be married to that person regardless if there is any type of abuse happening. That's the point that I was trying to make. You have to be married, living and married to that person for 2 years regardless of any abuse that is taking place. Of course, these individuals can report the abuse that is happening. The problem comes from the fact that these women fear reporting because of obstacles when seeking redress. They fear laws and women's shelters not being equipped to help them out and take care of, you know, the special needs that they need. And so these types of situations then again victimize the victim all over again and keep them from wanting to report it, because at the end of the day, all they want is their citizenship to go through. I will sit here and I will take whatever it is because I'm afraid that the people that are here to help me won't actually help me because they don't understand what it is I'm going through, and they already have some type of bias, even if it's not true. But these women believe that there is some type of bias happening against them, so it creates this fear of not wanting to seek the help that they rightfully deserve, because they are not giving the proper opportunities to understand that there are systems in place to help them. So this is why it's important to understand intersectionality. And the biggest question that I know a lot of people ask is, why should I care? I'm not the type of person who sits here and worries about, you know, like, I understand that black trans women are going to go through a lot. And I understand that black women going through a lot of stuff, but white women go through a lot too. Like, gay men go through, like, white gay men go through a lot too. White trans people go through a lot too. White disabled people go through a lot too. So why should we focus on people who are just minorities? And it's not about just focusing on people who are black and happen to be disabled, or Asian and happen to be gay, or people who are Mexican and happen to be, you know, transgendered or anything like that. Like, it's not about focusing on minorities only. It's about focusing on people who are in more than one minority group. So if you are gay and disabled, but you happen to be white, intersectionality still affects you. Because at the end of the day, you're disabled, and disabled people face discrimination. Regardless if we want to sit here and say, no, they don't, there are tons of systems in place to help disabled people. The world is not built for disabled people. The world is not built for disabled people. So yes, we have to take into consideration the disadvantages that they face being disabled. The world is not built for gay people. Again, the world is not built for gay people. So yes, we have to understand the disadvantages that happen to people that happen to also be gay. And we have to understand the discrimination and the disadvantages that happen to gay disabled individuals. Because the world is not built for gay disabled people. Once again, the world is not built for gay disabled people. We have to understand that as a society, when it comes to individuals that are part of multiple minority groups, and I have a family friend who is black and disabled, and I specifically made this podcast, not specifically for him, but for people to understand that individuals like him face a lot of fucking discrimination, and people don't want to sit here and understand it, because it's not just him being black and disabled. Like, he doesn't just face discrimination from being black and disabled, right? He faces a lot of discrimination because he's light-skinned. And I'm not saying that light-skinned people face a ton of discrimination, but there are disadvantages and discriminations that light-skinned individuals face. Not the same discrimination that dark-skinned individuals face. I will never in a million years ever say that light-skinned individuals are at the same level of discrimination that dark-skinned individuals face, because that is a whole completely different fucking topic and a whole completely different discussion. But I want it to be known that I'm not saying that in whatever way him being light-skinned or any light-skinned individual faces the same discrimination as a dark-skinned individual. But I'm breaking down his identity to better understand what I mean about understanding intersectionality. So when it comes to understanding how he navigates the world, you have to sit here and understand that he is a light-skinned black individual that is disabled and in his early 20s. So you have someone who is disabled at a very young age, and you have to think and understand the disadvantages that this young man faces. A fuck ton. Can you imagine what it would be like to be an individual who is disabled? And it's not my place to tell you what his disability is, but imagine living in a world where you are black and disabled, and then you get pulled over by the cops. How do you think that situation is going to be handled, as opposed to a white able-bodied person that gets pulled over by the police? Or even a white disabled person that's pulled over by the police. How is his experience with the police going to be completely different? And I'm not going to sit here and say that I know exactly how that situation is going to play out. But I can guarantee that you thought about it. And it was not as simple as what a white disabled person or a white able-bodied person would have gone through. And it's not just about pitting this individual against white people. Okay, what would his experience, how would his experience differ from a black able-bodied person or a dark-skinned disabled person, and they were pulled over by the police? How do those interactions differ? Would he have been treated a lot better than a dark-skinned disabled person? Probably. But that's not to say that his disability wouldn't have been a tool of discrimination used against him. Or the fact that he is black and is I don't want to say extremely black passing, but he this is an individual who was raised around, you know, I don't want to say raised around black people, because I know we've had conversations about him being raised by his black side of his family. So it's like you have an individual who grew up in black culture and exudes black culture and all that other kinds of stuff. And so when people see an individual or a black individual that exudes their own culture, for some reason that is so fucking threatening. And so you have this individual who isn't, and I don't want to say that disabled people use their disabilities as an advantage, but this is an individual who busts his ass off all the time, you know, and people don't seem to understand that there are disadvantages that he faces without even trying to make sure that people are aware of his disadvantages, if that makes sense. So understanding his walks through life and understanding the types of things that he has to go through and deal with as an individual who is light-skinned and disabled and black and all of these other things, straight, you know, all of these things that make up who he is. How does that differ from, say, me, who is a darker complexion? I'm not dark-skinned, but I'm darker than he is. Maybe by a shade and a half. Now that I think about it, I'm probably not that much darker than he is. But you get someone who is queer and able-bodied and queer. Or I already said queer, but my identity as a black person is completely different than the way that he identifies as a black person. Not that we're not both black, we both aren't both part of the black community, but our walks through life are going to be completely different. Because while he is straight, cisgendered, disabled, and I am gay, gender nonconforming, and black, our experiences are going to be extremely different, not only as a whole, when it comes to the way we go through life and how the world is going to see us, but even in our own communities, we are going to be seen completely different. Our worlds are going to be flipped completely upside down when you think about the differences in how we grew up. He was raised by his black family and I was raised by my white family. So how does that interaction differ from the interactions that we have, you know, in the world? You know, I'm not saying that he can't always call on his white mom to help him out and stuff like that, but there have been times where I have had the opportunity to use my white mother to help me in cases with the police. I'm not saying that he doesn't also have the opportunity to do something like that, because, I mean, he could. But I think, in my opinion, this is my opinion, I think that black men are less likely to call on their white moms and be like, hey, I need you to be like my white knight, essentially. I feel like black men are less likely to do something like that. I'm a big ass fucking baby. My mom is my savior. She's my protector. I will call her in fucking heartbeat if I feel like my life isn't any type of danger. You know, I'm not saying that he wouldn't do that or anything like that. I mean, him haven't had a discussion like that, so I don't know. But at the end of the day, I can understand that his experience in life is going to be 10,000 times completely different than my experiences in life. He might have advantages that come from, you know, understanding black culture and all that other kinds of stuff because he was raised by his black family. Me being raised by my white family, I don't know shit about the black community or shit about black culture. I mean, I do, but I mean, semantics. But at the end of the day, even our experiences in life are going to differ completely from the experience that my sister's boyfriend faces, because he is full black, dark-skinned, straight, cisgendered, right, able-bodied. He is going to experience far more disadvantages in life just by being dark-skinned. Even though me and my family friend fit into a lot more minority categories, I can say without a doubt that my sister's boyfriend will definitely face a lot more discriminations than me. I know that for a fucking fact. Just based off of his background, his childhood, his upbringing, and all the things that, again, it's not my place to tell his story. If he ever wants to come on one of my, you know, whatevers and come on here and talk, gladly have him share a story with you guys, but it's not my place to tell his background or anything like that. But at the end of the day, if I can sit here and understand, even though these two individuals are completely different but share some of the same characteristics, that their lives are going to be completely fucking different based off of the categories or the characteristics that make up their identities. And the reason understanding how complex these individuals are is so important is because understanding the complexity of individuals helps us understand the complexity of the groups that they are in, and then helps us to form systems or services that are better going to protect or help or mold, shape, form, whatever, help these groups in whatever way that it needs. This is going to help us as a society better understand feminism and better understand the racial inequalities that happen, better understand what it means to actually be racially sensitive. Intersectionality is so important because it helps us to continuously grow. It encourages us to acknowledge the bitter truths of our society. It helps us to call out ugly patterns. And it helps us to work together as a society to do something about it. A direct quote that I got, and I'm pretty sure this is from Bernadette, can correct me if I'm wrong, this falls under why it's important on why we should care about intersectionality. It demands that we recognize both the privileges of our identities and the disadvantages of others, not as a matter of comparing oppression, but as a matter of understanding the universalism of oppression.
So intersectionality is important for us to understand because it's not about us sitting here and playing oppression Olympics, but it is about understanding that different groups of individuals will face and do face discrimination and oppression for different types of situations. This means that yes, Black people face oppression. Asian, Mexicans, across the board, every race, ethnicity, nationality can face oppression at some point. Does that mean that their oppression is the same or is equal to any other minority group or nationality group or race group or anything like that? No. This is not about sitting here and saying, well, we did this and this happened to us and it was way worse than what happened to you guys. That's not what it's about. Granted, understanding that there are different levels to oppression is important, but not as important as understanding the university of, or the universalism, I don't know why I said university, but the universalism of oppression. And for those who still don't understand what oppression means, it means the long-term, ongoing, negative and unfair treatment of an individual or groups. And that's not me reading off of a fucking Google definition. You can Google the word oppression. But because I have said it so many fucking times to people who don't seem to understand, it's like ingrained in my fucking brain. So that was me paraphrasing. Oppression is about ongoing unfair treatment. Ongoing, continuous, meaning it never ended. It might have slowed down, but it never stopped occurring. You cannot say that a person is oppressed or an individual group is oppressed if there was a break in their oppression. When it comes to minority groups, there has never been a break in their oppression. And I hate to say it, but this is why a lot of white people don't fall under the minority category. But that's a whole different topic. I want us to understand that it is not about sitting here and nitpicking and pointing the finger at white people. I'm not sitting here and I don't want this episode to be about like a white people hate whatever. Like I don't want people to come away from this episode and make it seem like I'm bashing white people and I'm telling them they need to be more sensitive to minorities. That's not what I'm saying. Because when it comes to intersectionality, white people experience intersectionality just like everybody else. This is not something that is just for Black people. This is not something that is just for people of color. This is something that affects the entire world. Intersectionality is not for a specific person, individual, group. It is not like that. Intersectionality knows no race, knows no gender, knows no age. It does not discriminate. Anybody and everybody in some way, shape, or form can benefit from intersectionality. Or I don't even know if benefit's the word. But at the end of the day, this is not about a white versus people of color discussion. This is a discussion that is extremely inclusive for everyone. And not everybody's going to agree on intersectionality. And not everybody's going to agree on why it's important and all the other kinds of stuff. But this is an important conversation that needs to be started. And it's an important conversation that a lot of people need to be having with themselves and with friends and family, but more importantly with yourself, because it helps you to understand your own personal biases and it helps you to understand your own personal, quote, ugly patterns, and helps you to understand and recognize those so that you can fix them and change them and become a better person and be able to help other people become better people and help educate people. Intersectionality is about growth. Understanding intersectionality is about growth. So with that being said, I hope that with this episode, I want to leave it on a question. I have a question for you guys. And that's how I'm going to end today's episode. Not a question, but here's like an activity for you guys. Make a list, and it can be a mental list. You could write it down, but make a list of what your intersectionality is. What minority groups do you fit into? Maybe you only fit into one. Maybe you only fit into two. Maybe you fit into 10. Make a list of all the ones that you fit into. And then make a list for someone who fits into more minority groups than you do. And think about how their life has been impacted, not based on their intersectionality, but based on how you know them. And then see how that ties into the types of groups that they are a part of. And then do the same to someone who is a part of less intersectionality groups or minority groups than you are. And think about how they have gone through life and how them as a person, how that has gotten them through life, and then see how that ties in with the groups that they are a part of. I think this will give us a better understanding of our own intersectionalities, our own advantages and disadvantages that we face, and also it gives us a better understanding of the disadvantages and advantages of the people around us and how those being included in those groups has affected how they navigate through the world, or you know, how they see the world or how they perceive other people. You know, it's a good way, and you can even do this with somebody else. Sit down with someone and ask them, like, what types of minority groups are you a part of? You know, and if they don't know, then, you know, educate them on what the minority groups are. Like, educate them on the social characteristics that make up who we are, you know? I think this is a great way to get us into understanding what intersectionality is and getting this conversation started. So I hope that with this episode, it helped people to understand what intersectionality is, why it's important, where it came from. And I hope that it gives people the space to have this open discussion with people. And I hope that I didn't offend anybody with today's episode. And if I did, I apologize for that. You can always write into me, email me. Send me a voice memo, hit me up on Facebook or wherever, and, you know, have a discussion with me. You can come on the episode and we can talk about what what you disagreed with, what you agreed with. I'd love to have you here. I'd love to hear what you have to say. But without further ado, I hope everybody has a wonderful, wonderful day.